Hey guys, welcome to yet another episode. And now, first of all, let me start over the fact that I love the fact that we are twinning today. Like,
I know, right? It's like there was a memo, we didn't get it, but
silent memo. Anyway, today we're going to be talking about something that I find particularly interesting. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about founders' agreements. You know, everyone, almost every business person has a partner. And the question is, do you need to have a founder's agreement? What is a founder's agreement? And we have some amazing people with us today to talk about that. We have Koja Buckner, who I think I'll call you Mr. Serial Entrepreneur. He has an amazing taste for businesses. He has, he partnered with his co-founder, Jake Kwesi, who runs Jamestown Coffee, and they have established some amazing businesses that many people frequent. My personal favorite, Treehouse. And they also have Afro Spirits,
which is my go-to gift to people.
Ooh.
And they then later buy a case after I give them a parcel.
Thank you. I was wondering where the numbers were coming
from. Oh, definitely. It's from me, yeah.
And his latest enterprise, Petit Oiseau. Did I mention?
Le Petit Oiseau. The little bird. Yes.
Perfect, yeah.
We also have Amma Jampo, my namesake, goddess, founder of Scale Up Africa. Scale Up Africa, how can I describe it? It is providing, it's providing services, it's providing technical assistance for SMEs such as myself. Very, very impactful business. And Amma, I don't know what other things I can say about you, but you are incredible and you're great inspiration to me. And thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you guys.
Same here. Same here. I like the fact that we're also doing the captain thing, man.
Yes.
Okay. Enough of the love fest. Let's get to the...
Let's dive in.
So, founders' agreements, right? You've decided to do a business, maybe with a friend or a professional colleague. What is it important to write the thing down, and at what stage do we write it down, and is it a big deal? Are we doing a whole thing?
May I start?
Yeah.
So I look at agreements in two forms. Mm-hmm. One, you know, the spirit, and you know, the letter, right? In short, my answer to that question is yes, you know, definitely. Because these are two individuals coming in to, you know, undertake, you know, let's call it a journey, right? Mm-hmm. And they are two individuals, right? Separate people. You definitely want to be aligned in principle with what exactly you're about to do. And you know, in essence, you know, what each person means to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, you know, it needs to start in the spirit and then, you know, the letter. And in the spirit, I mean, just really a clear agreement where there's a discussion, just kind of laying it all out, right? In most instances, actually, in, you know, a number of the businesses that I'm involved in, it definitely took a lot longer than, you know, you know, a couple of weeks or a couple of months. Actually took, you know, probably a year or so before, you know, we had an actual, you know, agreement, right? Mm. And, the main reason is, although in my previous life, mm-hmm. right, you know, I was basically, you know, my career was based on just kind of setting up, you know, businesses, projects, and it was all about, you know, agreements, right? At every point, at every interface point, mm-hmm. there was an agreement. Starting with friends, actually. You know, starting businesses with friends, you know, the reality is, you know, it's really a conversation. Let's, you know, what can we do here, right? Ali Bar started by seeing a dilapidated Ali when Kwesi wanted, you know, to get a warehouse, and, you know. We'll go see it, and then, you know, the idea is, why don't we turn this into a bar, right? As simple as that.
Mm.
So how do you, you know, write out a full agreement? And agreements are, you know, clauses, right, that, you know, you probably need to, you know, think worst case scenario to be able to draft the perfect agreement, right, to mitigate all the risks that you think will come, you know, further down the line, whether it's, you know, it's this close or you know, far. So, you know, I think, it, in short, the spirit of it is the initial agreement, right? You know, where you get into the detail of who's doing what exactly are we doing, mm-hmm. how are we going to do it, how are we funding it, you know, mm-hmm. how much are you bringing, how much am I bringing, mm-hmm. and how all that kind of, you know, crystallizes into either, you know, a shareholding or really how it's all structured. Mm. I'll leave it here and, you know, just kind of go with the conversation. And, you know, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's really important to establish who the boss is. You know, sometimes it's friends, friends, girls, girls, boys, boys. And then it becomes this business concept, right?
Right.
100% of the time, someone would have led that idea and will have the expertise, experience, the background to drive what will become the business, right? So I think respecting the fact that there is a CEO in the mix, I think that's the first step. The minute you feel, oh yeah, 50-50, let's just do it, let's go ahead, I think you're royally in trouble, right? Mm. So I think there is a need to establish the dynamics and respect each other's roles. If I'm a CEO, I respect that maybe I'm a very technical person. I might need a co-founder to support me because they're good at sales or they're good at operations or they're good at marketing, for example. And that's a big deficit for me personally as a CEO. So I think you know, appreciating one's strengths, one's weaknesses, understand there's a CEO in the mix, bringing in the co-founders and establishing the fact that you want a motivated team, okay? But would that person be a better worker or partner? These are things you, I mean, not everyone is going to be a good entrepreneur or partner to you as a CEO, right? So I think these are the things you need to actually examine very critically before you rush into any agreement. And it's about, it's the same with hiring. Are you hiring for skill or are you hiring for attitude and characteristics? So these are the little nuances that I think people tend to overlook.
Yeah.
And if you don't deal with them at the very beginning, they tend to catch up with you.
Could we take a deeper dive into the last point you made? Because in reality, I find that many entrepreneurs do have an idea, and if they had their own way, they would be the sole founders. But they find, let's say, I started a venture, I meet Nanama. I cannot pay Nanama as, if I'm bringing her on, say, as a legal counsel, but I would rather probably suggest the idea of her coming on board as a co-founder. So the idea for her to come as a co-founder was an afterthought because I did not have the money to pay her immediately.
Right.
So, I mean, I want us to, can we talk more about the considerations that many people in that same situation would have to consider and to make when they're bringing someone on board, not necessarily because that was the initial plan for them to co-found, but because it just kind of happened. I don't have money to pay you, but maybe I can give you equity. And in that arrangement, you become a co-founder.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, you know, equity of what, right? Like you're not in business until you actually can prove that people appreciate the solution you're giving to them.
Yeah.
Whether it's Treehouse, whether it's Alibaba, whether it's Scale Up Africa, whether it's, you know, Nanama's firm, what is the value you're offering? And is someone or enough people willing to pay for that service? If you're not able to generate money or revenues, it's just an idea. Mm. It's just a nice idea on a spreadsheet somewhere that you guys are doing your boys, boys, girls, girls on Friday night talking about the business. So I think it's really about the ability of the other person that you're bringing on as a CEO to translate or bring something, whether it's a clientele base or relationships or a sales background that they can translate into revenue for the business. If you assess those things carefully, then, you know, you have a better chance of succeeding in the business.
Mm. So this is interesting. You know, in that situation, you actually really need to be careful. I have, you know, an example in mind, right? Where just too many people were offered equity, right? What happens is, for me, look, equity is almost the last resort of a partnership, right? There are different ways in which you can actually work with people, right? But not give, you know, equity. Because when that goes out, you've basically shared the decision making, right? That reduces how nimble you are as a, you know, a person, a founder, or, you know, the nimble nature of the business itself. And, you know, you run the risk of having everybody feel that level of entitlement so much that that you have too many cooks in the kitchen, right?
That's a good point.
And I have a very clear, you know, example in mind. And, you know, for a while, I struggled, you know, somewhat, you know, emotionally, right, with this. And so you'd look in setting up, you know, partnerships, you really want to assess what type of partner, right, you're bringing on board and how you structure that partnership. Extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, yeah, you can tell I'm trying to say.
I'm not saying too much. Okay, no, feel free.
Who were they?
Kojo, but that is so important because sometimes you don't actually know what the person can do until you get into the situation.
Exactly. Yes.
Sometimes you're both in corporate, and then you decide to do a venture.
Exactly.
And then you realize that actually that person needs to be in a structure, and they don't have the entrepreneurial spirit. Because it's the risk. It's scary sometimes.
Yes.
So you don't know until you get in. So my question is, do you split the equity at the beginning? You said no, which I thought was really interesting. So how do you bridge that gap where you're all putting stuff in, and then at some point one dude is not getting equity?
I think you need some caps though, right? If you are, I agree with your point about equity probably being the last part of the process,
because
you do want to see what they can bring, what they can do within the constraints of what you have created as a CEO, right? You're the originator. But I think, you know, that there are certain tools that you can apply legally, you know, in terms of vesting, you know, in terms of having a limited period beyond which they can't claim to be a shareholder. Actually, you need to have a time, right? A period where they get the chance to prove themselves, bring
whatever. How long?
Maybe 2 years, you know, most startups. Wow. Yeah, because in this environment, I think 2 years is a minimum. Normally it would be a year. If you go to Silicon Valley, it would be a year. But in Ghana, it's a different terrain altogether.
I think you need,
and most startups will fail. Like year one, I forget the percentage, 70%, 80%, 90% failure. Right? You know, that's standard across the world, actually.
Over 90%
failure. It's a very, very high rate of failure. So that's the reality. So you're most likely not to succeed anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But on the off chance that you have something real and something tangible, something long term, you need to really take your time with the process, because if you haven't got the right person with the right culture, the right mindset, the right background, the right contacts and networks, the ability to translate into business, then maybe they should just be an employee later down the line, not your partner.
This is actually pretty interesting, because then, you know, that begs the question, you know, what converts it, right, into equity?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need to do, right, during that period to actually, you know, earn, right, that, you know, that that equity
state. And those metrics should be clear. I think that those are the things. Like, what if I'm expecting someone to be a salesperson and they don't bring any sales after a year, 2 years, 3 years? I mean, obviously they have failed at that task. If I'm expected to bring in contracts based on my background and I'm not bringing contracts into the, like, to translate into revenue, then I failed.
You know what's interesting with this as well is, most businesses that start, really, you know, it starts as an idea, but you really don't know what it takes to actually get the business. And I think you touched on it, you know, earlier.
Still figuring it out.
Right? You know, how much is going to cost to actually get it off the ground? That's one. How much is going to, you know, what is going to, and what it will, what it needs, right, to actually convert from just an idea to a money-making venture. And most of the time, you actually learn that on
the job.
You know, the job, right? And I feel most, you know, people who start with an idea and just kind of pull people together, and, you know, the point you were making earlier, and the reason why I think it's dangerous is, you know, you pull everybody together and in your mind, you know, you're coming in, okay, so you lawyer, you know, you accountant, you sales, you marketing, you know, in the future, and this is where people overpromise, you know, we're all getting equity, right? The question is, what percentage of equity does that, what do you call it, that scope of work, translate to? And in the end, what happens is you probably have two or three people in this conversation that just started as an idea, right? Started as a conversation. Basically just kind of moving that pin from here to there, right? And turning it into a full business. But in the end, you know, once it's not discussed early and laid out very clearly, and, you know, once you have too many people around the table, you know, you can't award equity based on merit, because it's just too many people. And as you know, we're all in, you know, we said we're all going to have equity, right? So now, you know, everybody gets 2%. For instance, why? Because we're saving, you know, a chunk for, you know, the future where you need a catalytic, you know, investor, you know, to come in. So, you know, this is the structure now. And it doesn't make sense, right? You're totally right. Some people are not made, right, to be entrepreneurs or to play the small game, right? Because entrepreneurship is really, you know, learning the small game. And people who are in corporates that, you know, work for multi-billion dollar companies probably don't understand the small game. Small game. Why? Yeah. Because everything is there. So when it gets to it, you have a totally different, you know, understanding of what it takes to actually move it from here to, you know, what next the business level actually should become. Yeah, it's an interesting...
You can't tell ahead of time, though. Listening to you, if I'm one of the listeners, I'm thinking, you don't know what it's... You just said it, you don't know what it takes, right? You bring a bunch of people together. You don't know what it's going to take to actually get it off the ground. And I'm saying there's shares and there's vesting. So do we dash everybody shares? We don't actually know how much effort people are going to put in. We dash everybody shares and we say it will vest over 2 years. Mm-hmm. What's worked in your experience, either personal experience or you've seen other people?
What strategy have you employed so far that seems...
Personally, I won't call it a strategy, to be very honest, right? I have two specific cases, right, of ventures I'm involved in. One that we've discussed right now. The other that is, you know, two friends. We want to do this. This, you know, assess how much it will take to do it. How much are you bringing in? And then there's a blend between, you know, actual cash, you know, versus sweat equity, right? And, you know, sometimes you have to think of partnerships like a marriage, right? You're literally getting, you know, involved with someone way more than just, you know, sharing an office, right? And there needs to be some level of, you know, trust and understanding, right? Mutual, you know, understanding. So that conversation could be easy on one front or could be very complicated on another. The other case, right, for me is an amazing one, right? It's, you know, we said we're going to do this. You know, I asked the question, right? You know, what do you, and that's another part. I feel like the CEOs you mentioned need to have controlling stake. It's always important because then they drive, right? So, you know, you have the conversation with a person and, you know, whoever is taking that driving seat, if you're riding shotgun, whoever's taking that driving seat, what do you want to, you know, what do you want to retain, right? And then we can have a conversation around that. And then, you know, you can split. There's a calculation for how you calculate equity. There's ways you can do stuff, right? But in the end, it's back to the point I made earlier, is the spirit of it, right? Once the spirit is there, there's really little chaos, right, that exists or ensues, right, in the journey ahead.
Yeah. I'm going to ask a question with let's give a hypothetical situation. So let's say there are two people, both work in, say, a bank, and they're both good, and they decide to co-found an enterprise together. Mm-hmm. They're coming with equal amount of equity, equal amount of capital to run the new venture. And say one person said, because I was in a business development role in the firm you're in, I'm going to run point as CEO, And that person goes, because maybe I was the software developer, I'm going to be the CTO. That's what you often find happening in many enterprises, at least in these parts. One person goes to CEO and the other person goes to CTO, both with equal amounts invested. So they decide to split it 50-50. In your example, right, would you say, how would you reconcile differences? When we cannot agree on one point, who has the final say? Or how do we get to yes in that point?
I would say don't do that. I think you definitely need someone in the driver's seat. Mm. And it has to be very clear from the beginning.
From the
get-go. And also you need a plan. So if you're the CEO, it's your kind of... Definitely will be someone's idea. The origination will come from someone. Both of us are not going to have the same idea at this exact same time. Do you understand? So there will be someone with the idea and maybe the wherewithal to create a business out of it. So I would say don't do that. I'd say, you know, have a very clear plan as to what you want the business to achieve. Maybe that, you know, phase it. You know, you phase one, maybe, okay, you want to acquire 100 customers that will come to my place, I don't know, twice a month or twice a week. You know, see how that goes somewhere small. You start somewhere small. See how you work together. See the dynamics. See, you know, does she turn up on Sundays? Does she work after 8 p.m. every night? Like, these are the things that you'd be looking out for from your co-founder, right? Mm. And then you could start gradually. I mean, and then, of course, someone puts down some money. You know, it's like a pilot phase. And then you could scale it up gradually. I think those are the ways that some people hedge and see how they feel about each other in terms of, you know,
so starting like a business. Dating before the...
Dating before you actually get hitched. Yeah. Makes I think sense. These are the things you can do to almost pilot the relationship before going full throttle into something that is longer term and more complicated.
Yeah. What about, did you have something to add to that?
What you know, decision-making is, so 100% agree, right? But you really need to have some level of clarity on how decisions are made. Because a 50-50 means, you know, if you say no and I say yes, that's a deadlock.
Deadlock, yeah.
Right? And a deadlock, you know, as lawyers, you know how, you know, intense, you know, that situation could be. But as friends, you know, in your mind, you know, everything is rosy. We're friends, you know, we'll never, you know, disagree with each other. You know, at any point in time, somebody will leave, somebody will step aside so we, you know, we can all move on. But worst case scenario is always the constant scenario where, no, I said yes, you said no. We're not moving ahead. So you always need that person who is in the lead. And there's another point about the CEOs and the CTOs and all these roles. A CEO is not not just about, you know, I have a good idea, come, let's go. It's a whole scope of work, right? A CTO, similar, right? COO, CFO, like these are actual... you know, not just qualities, but skills that are required to actually be able to get these things running, right? And that the understanding of that in itself is a very important, you know, prerequisite, right? Mm-hmm. To starting this venture, mm-hmm. right? You're a founder, mm-hmm. but you're probably not a CEO. You're probably not CEO quality, mm-hmm. right? You probably came up with the idea, but you know, I think you'll be a far better CEO, right? You know, in this structure. And so, you know, there needs to be that flexibility to be able to seed, right, that that role, right? Even if you came up with the idea.
This is very dynamic. Very good point.
You know, this segues nicely into we're talking about marriages and
prenups dating. And divorce. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Prenups and divorce. So, I mean, what you're talking about is super detailed. And as you're saying, when you start, everybody's excited. But what would you say about the importance of, A, considering how you're exiting the business, mm-hmm. if some of you need to take... You know, some of you are doing this because you need money at a certain point, be it school fees or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So exit. And divorce, like, how do you fire your co-founder?
Yeah.
That's where you guys come in. This is where the lawyers come in, and I think it's really tough. I mean, many of us listening would have had to do this, and I think
wanting to do it
and not being able to, or not feeling that they. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had to seek advice on the similar situation personally. I've had others who have come to me for advice on the same situation. It's very, very, very common. But I think that the key thing is being open in communication, written communication. It's very, very important in terms of documenting what's happening, what's not happening, your meetings, your board meetings. I mean, if you're a limited company, you should be having regular board meetings. Yeah. But I think to start off with, you keep it simple. You give yourself enough time to get to know each other. You get a feel for how that actually works or doesn't work. And then, you know, if it comes to divorce, you need to be very, very clear on what the terms are and how you're going to extract.
And accept it, yeah.
Yeah.
Could you, what do you think about it?
Nobody gets into a marriage, you know, thinking about divorce, right?
Well, some people do.
Okay. But you see, it's a reality. Then, you know, back to the conversation about two people or more coming into an arrangement, it, you know, the reality is, you know, there may, right, be that, you know, point where you need to separate.
Yeah.
Or as a business, right, thinking, you know, still talking about it, you know, in marital terms, you probably, you know, the business is a baby, right? The question is, what time, you know, at what...
Yeah, so divorce.
So divorce and or exit, right?
Yes.
Two different scenarios. One where you're actually breaking the partnership. I do have a story, though.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's for the podcast. I was working in GE then. Started a shirt company called JC Parkner. Myself, you know, my best friend, you know, and I say that with my chest up, right? You know, groomsman, everything, right? I was his groomsman, best man, right? Everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got in thinking, look, we both love, you know, fashion to an extent, right? And we wanted to actually, you know, create something. Cool. Built the business, went through, let's just say, you know, in terms of roles, responsibilities, you know, weight lifting, all that, you know, it brought a lot more, you know, instances of us clashing, right? In the end, you know, the exit really was just putting the business on hold, right? Just pausing. Because again, you know, if you do things as friends, you can damage your actual friendship and damage the business in the process. So there's really no, you know, exit or divorce here, right? It was really basically, okay, everybody go to sleep.
Full stop.
In another instance, you really need to have a plan, right? And think, you know, like a private, you know, think private equity, like, right? Is I'm going into this. I have an idea what the business is. I have an idea, you know, kind of the how the business will grow, right? And at what point the business will reach good maturity, ripe fruit, and, you know, the best time to exit, right? And, you know, kind of pluck the fruits, get the best, you know, deal would be at, you know, 6 years down the line, right? 2 years to kind of grow the company, another 4 or 5 years, you know, good standard, you know, good cash flow, good business, you know, metrics, yeah. Right? And at that point, I'll go out and basically sell down, right? Have somebody come in, you know, capture a bit of the value that I've gained, if not all, right? That's a clear plan for an exit. And you can actually have that plan from the beginning, right? So, you know, it's not always a, you know, a gloomy, right, conversation when you talk about exits. It's a plan both for, you know, the foreseen and, you know, unforeseen. And in some situations, you just get into a situation where you need to, you know, split it. One thing that will help, and that helps, is just being very clear, and we've discussed this in different forms, right? Being clear up front, what exactly are the, for want of a better term, the KPIs, right, that actually measure your performance, right, against, you know, the expectation, right? And then, you know, on the back of that, if you're not doing it, then there's you know, a paper trail, there's a basis on which we say, look, this is not working. We got into this, you know, you were supposed to do this, A, B, C, D. You've done A, but we're still lacking B, C, and D after 3 years. It's not working for the, you know, health of the business.
Yeah.
We think, right, collectively. And there needs to be a consensus, right? Or if not a consensus, you know, have enough voting rights to be able to say, it doesn't work. Let's move on. Let's get somebody else in. You know, a decision like that, right, to save or salvage what was left of the business, or, you know, save the business, you know, entirely.
But I think another thing with the exit situation, culturally in Ghana, we don't really understand the concept of exit.
Yeah.
Investors want companies to buy as an asset class, right? We have a stock market in Ghana. We have a Ghana stock exchange. Very few SMEs are floated on the stock exchange locally. So I think these are all elements that I think more SMEs, entrepreneurs should think about, educate themselves about, plan for, work towards. So we have more companies that are bigger than what we have now. I mean, we have to take the S out of SME. I would say that all the time. The small thinking, you know, just me and my friend, me and my boo, me and my, you know, community, enterprise, you know. Mm-hmm. It's great. It's cute. It's survival, though. But if you're looking at properly, like, you know, looking at commercial businesses from the smaller side of the spectrum of business, I think these are all things that more of us should think about, educate ourselves about, and aim for. Because, you know, there's money out there, but it's like you have to structure yourself in a way that is lean, profitable, growth-oriented. You know, your cash flow is looking good. There's some good prospects out there. And you look forward to a potential exit, which is a positive one, a great story for more people to come up behind you.
Sounds good. Yeah. I think listening to both of you speak and on this, it seems to me that one of the most important things that need to be established is having a ground understanding of how everything is to be structured. And I think you mentioned something about paper trail, which is within the context of founders agreement is quite interesting. But how important is having a paper trail to document some of the conversations you're having? And how important is it within the context of a co-founder relationship?
Well, you guys are lawyers, you know.
No, I mean, it's
the most important thing, right? Because all you need is evidence of what we've discussed. Otherwise, it's, I don't, you know, did we really?
You didn't say, you know, that. Wouldn't agree said? That.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's, I don't remember it that way, right? And you always have that, you know, term. I don't remember it that way.
Right? In reality, right? In reality, we are exchanging WhatsApps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're exchanging very WhatsApps. True. And then there'll be one stray email.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of conversations, lots of phone calls.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And if it was a different context, you would follow it up with a, you know.
It should be followed up with an email to convey what you discussed, what you agreed.
Yeah.
You should be having your board meetings. We're talking about structured limited company by shares, right? We're not talking about sole proprietor, which is a different kettle of fish altogether. But if you're a limited company by shares, you should be having certain basic, you know, disciplines in place, and the email is the official correspondence, not WhatsApp, not to SMS, so, and not phone call.
That's interesting, because I have a question, and this is more to you.
Free legal advice.
Would you not, classify WhatsApps as a valid paper trail?
Actually, they are discoverable, so you can tender them in evidence in court.
Perfect.
But the way we are structuring this is that we are talking to you guys who are at the coalface with the experience in the hopes that other people who are also at the coalface, you know, they can relate.
Mm-hmm.
But then there will be additional materials
mm-hmm.
where we dive a little bit more into the technical aspects of a founder's agreement.
Got it.
Though you guys have done an amazing job of fleshing out some of the fundamentals. Mm. I can't believe that it's half an hour is
already.
I think so.
Oh my goodness.
I think so. I know.
Ah, yeah, I had a couple more in me. But it,
You had more questions.
I just had
you.
One more. One more.
You had one more.
Just one more.
Can we?
Oh, please, please, okay. Go ahead.
From your experience, both of you, what questions would you wish you had asked certain people you entered into business arrangements with?
Oh, I'm glad we asked that one. That's a good one to end on.
I think, honestly, asking for references. Wow, like, actual commercial references from, like, established entities. Not someone's pastor, father, or mother. Like, proper references. Like, you would for any job interview. Yeah. Like, this is your business partner. I think we should be a lot more professional about how we deal with these conversations. Because they're very deeply personal, but it's your business. So I think some of these things, like, people say a lot of things. They make themselves sound great, like dating, you know. Your profile picture's all made up. You had your makeup artist come, lighting, camera action. But then in the morning, you don't look like that, right? Yeah. So, but these are serious issues. So I think I would have probably asked around a bit more, a bit more background checking to substantiate the claims
that they made.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting question.
That's a tough one.
No. So look, one that I wish I had asked is. Interesting. Kind of setting the toll gates, right? And saying, you know, if we do achieve or we get to this point, what does that mean, right? Towards, you know, the holding, you know, the shareholding, the, you know, equity stake, the ownership, right? And, you know, the reason why this is important is it will then probably have determined how much, you know, blood, sweat, and tears I put into it, right? Or you know, how much I would demand from, you know, the others, right? Because in the end, you start, again, you know, I'm trying to make this as realistic as possible, but you literally start and it's, you know, it's a conversation. We're sitting here having a conversation. But this, you know, what would happen if we did this, right? Yeah. And none of you in the business know it. But then you basically just go down that path. I'm one who gets quite, you know, tunnel visioned, right? Once it's done. I don't look left, right, or think. And sometimes it's not the best thing. Because what happens is you kind of just keep, going. And then you get to a point, and in your mind, it's, I'm entitled to this. But that's just a sense of entitlement, and that's why this conversation is important with the founders' agreement and the understandings up front, right? Mm-hmm. Because in the end, there's no entitlement if there's no prior arrangements, right? So whoever said, oh hey, how about you hop on, and you come in at a light bulb stage, right? But then turn that light bulb into a full setup. If you don't have the conversation up front, then, it's not yours. And, you can get it as emotional as you'd want to, right? But the fact is the fact, right? And sometimes the spirit, right, when it changes, right, fine, they owe you one because then they did you dirty, right? But in the end, if there's no letter, there's nothing to reference. There's nothing to go back to, right? So, back to paper trail and everything, once you have that, paper trail of, even in the initial stages, right, of this is what we're going to do, ask the right questions up front, get some level of clarity, especially when you're friends, right? So you don't damage that relationship.
Yeah. And manage your expectations, right? Your roles, your responsibilities, your expectations. If your partner's your partners, if your boss with a coworker who happens to be a friend, that's another situation. But these are all options to be explored, and it's not something to rush into at all.
100%.
Yeah. Agreed. Don't ever do it in a bar, guys.
Can we just appreciate how Kojo has been just pushing and everything, letter and spirit, Afro spirit.
Subliminal messages.
Which camera's on? Drink Afro spirit.
I think that some of the stuff you've been bringing the realness. Yep. Sometimes there is a boss and a subordinate, and we're all calling each other founder, and so these all of these nuggets that you've shared are invaluable. I mean, usually we do a takeaway, but you guys just did the takeaway. Yeah. All I will end by saying is that this is so fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
It's the foundation of any enterprise. And if you don't do the things that you need to do, the business can just end. So thank you so, so much for sharing the wisdom, sharing the stories, the ideas. I mean, it's been an incredible half an hour.
It has been great.
Yeah.
No, it's amazing.
Thanks very, so much very for
appreciative.
Having us.
Thank you for having us.
There's no enlightenment without a prior arrangement.
What's that?
No enlightenment without a prior arrangement.
Okay.
That's what he said.
All right.
Did I say that? I mean, sounds good. It definitely sounds good.
Thank you, guys.
No,
thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. It's a wrap.